Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcasts currently feature the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
Then God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above, or that is on the earth beneath, or that is in the water underneath the earth. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing children for the iniquities of parents to the third and the fourth generation of those who reject me, but showing steadfast love to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not make wrongful use of the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not acquit anyone who misuses God's name. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy.
Matt just read for us the first four of the Ten Commandments. It's been a bit fun, actually, this week for me. I conducted a very unscientific poll. It's not official, but I have found that along with one of my favorite theologians. She wrote about this, so I thought, I'm going to test this out. Most people can name seven or eight. And so I went around and asked people, not you all, because in case you all had read our stuff, I thought you would know. So I asked like strangers. And, well, that was interesting. So, but here's what mostly people remember. Have one God and only one God. No cussing with God's name involved. Honor your parents. Don't kill. Don't break your marriage. Don't steal. Don't lie. Don't wish you had what other people have. Pretty much, if you give a few minutes, people could remember that. Commandments 2 and 4 were the most forgotten. And Barbara Brown Taylor says it this way. That second commandment was dispatched historically at the Council of Nicaea back in 787 when the church decided that graven images were okay. And if it had pleased God to become incarnate in a person, the church reasoned that it could not displease God for us to have images of that person that God had become. So iconoclasts have continued to rise up over the years, but very few Christians regard icons like stained glass windows or Jesus t-shirts as sinful. So thus we have these things. I know. There's that.
There should be a commandment against that.
Thou shalt not have glow in the dark Christ in your bedroom. Yeah, or on your dashboard. The fourth commandment has also undergone a more gradual demise. It says this, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. When Jesus declared that the Sabbath was made for humankind and not humankind for the Sabbath, many of his followers deduced that they were then free from Sabbath observance. And since the rabbis themselves had said as much, the Sabbath has been given to you, you have not been given to the Sabbath. It seems more likely, I think, that Jesus was just trying to sharpen his disciples' sense of Sabbath keeping and that it was a divine gift, not a divine burden. But since he had to say it to them and remind them, it seems that maybe even the disciples had difficulty with keeping the Sabbath. So maybe we're in good company. I don't know. The Sabbath was the day when Israel celebrated its freedom. Its freedom from being compelled to work. On that one day every week, the people did not have to earn their keep, and they still were fed. On that one day every week, they remembered their own worth lay not in their own productivity, but in God's primordial love for them. Sabbath offered them a foretaste of what heaven might be like, and when they would lie back someday in that hopeful future, lie back in God's arms and behold all of the glory of creation around them and love it. Well, last week, I think Matt helped us to think about a definition of Sabbath as we began this worship series on Sabbath as resistance. And we hope that this series will help us to reclaim some significance for ourselves of Sabbath, not just as rest or escape, but actually as resistance against the insane pace and demands and injustice that is rampant in our world. Every week, we're going to focus on a particular expression of Sabbath from the scripture. Next week, Matt is going to reflect on Jesus's relationship with Sabbath. And this week, we're going to look at how the commandment of God to remember the Sabbath and keep it holy often gets ignored, misunderstood, or, as I said in my unscientific poll, totally forgotten. Theologian Walter Brueggemann writes that when you talk about Sabbath, you need to remember that Yahweh, God, is about restfulness and not about restlessness. When the Jewish people received those Ten Commandments from Moses on Mount Sinai, those commandments were a gift from God. Moses had led them out of slavery in Egypt under the unjust and tyrannical rule of Pharaoh. They had escaped that. This ruler, Pharaoh, created an economy of absolute scarcity in their lives, in which work was constant, unrelenting, and rest did not exist for any person in their culture. Everyone was under the rule of this Pharaoh man, and he was on the very top of that pyramid, right? And the commandments that the Jewish people received were radical because they claimed that God was on the top of that pyramid. God was God and Pharaoh was not. And when the Jewish people heard that they were to have no other God, you heard Matt read that too, nor were they to make any images of God, they were getting a message that the image of Pharaoh, even though he was absolute in their lives, even though he was tyrannical, even though he was unrelenting in his authority, even though he occupied their nightmares, their fear of not ever being able to catch up, even though Pharaoh occupied the pinnacle of power over them and was an endless, anxious presence, he was no longer going to be the image that they were to put on their dashboards. No more. When Moses presented those Ten Commandments, everyone was remembering Pharaoh, even though they had made it through. And they looked around and they're like, oh, Pharaoh's not with us. Because when they came through the Red Sea, he was rendered helpless. And the Pharaoh had been disabled at the bottom of those red waters that they had passed through. The people, so happy to have escaped, when they received those Ten Commandments in that moment, this was interesting to think about, they didn't read them before they said, okay, we're in. They hadn't even heard it yet. I have all these, you know, Mel Brooks images of, there were really 15 in one. Do you know that movie? Yeah. All right. Never mind. I digress. But they didn't read the fine print. So great was their joy in freedom. And so they take this next step on their journey and receive the commandments, and they try to make this transition. And this was no easy task because the commandments included the neighbor, their neighbor in the social order, and the commandments dared to imagine that the maintenance of a loving and neighborly community had to do with resting with each other. And it was a shift from all those threats of a dog-eat-dog world and competition with your neighbor to simply even stay alive and to keep your family alive. It was a huge shift into keeping everyone alive and loving together. So the Sabbath came by breaking all those interlocking cycles that people had lived under in generation after generation. And restfulness and work stoppage, that was not their way. But restlessness and anxiety, that is how they knew how to live. And God was calling them to prayer and rest. How were they to do it? How were they to examine and live into a way in which, in order to meet God, they had to rest? They had to switch their life from being restless to restful. Well, it's not easy, and I don't think it's easy for us. And this is how it is when we plan these series and you don't know, and I'm in the car and I'm listening to NPR and Radiolab comes on. If you haven't read or listened to Radiolab, it's phenomenal radio. And this week, there was a piece about speed and the rate of speed. And they highlighted a TED Talk by a guy named Carl Honoré about slowing down. He challenged all of us in this talk to get in touch with your inner tortoise. That's what he called it, right? And he says many of us have wake-up calls that get us in touch with our inner tortoise, which end up teaching us the value of slowing down, and that most often those wake-up calls are illnesses. Illnesses, unfortunately. Or, in the case of one of my friends, a terrible car accident. That's a wake-up call. His own wake-up call, for him, was not that, but it was very noteworthy. It was bedtime stories with his son. I'm really happy to say I don't think you have that problem. I really don't. But he did. He didn't want to slow down enough to tell bedtime stories with his son. And his wake-up call started happening when he realized he's reading Cat in the Hat and trying to skip pages. It's not even that long. Wait till he gets to Madeline, you know? It's not. And then his child gets upset, right? Because the child has memorized the story. That's not how it goes, Daddy. But even that, he said, I started thinking about it, but that wasn't his wake-up call. His wake-up call came when he was in the morning scanning the New York Times bestseller list, and he saw a review for a new book called The 1 Minute Bedtime Story. And he said he got totally excited, and he thought, that's for me. And in that moment, he went, whoa, what is wrong with me? I think I need to make better use of bedtime story time. And just so you know, I checked, and it exists. There is, on Amazon.com, 1 minute bedtime stories. Not only that, there is a whole popular website where hundreds of our favorite stories are boiled down to one sentence. It's true. You can find it. Just Google it. He wasn't kidding. The reality of restlessness in our society is really epidemic when you go that far. I don't really think I need to say much more about it. I'm sure we could spend time tracing how we got here, go back to Martin Luther, who none of us really want to go back there, but he brought up, you got to work for God's love, right? We worry endlessly and make ourselves restless. Because in a lot of ways, we North American people just think we always have to be busy. But it's not necessary. We need to put away the idol of busyness. In practicing our faith, Dorothy Bass writes this about us. Americans need to rest, and they need to be reminded that they do not cause the grain to grow and that their greatest fulfillment does not come through the acquisition of material things. Moreover, the planet needs a rest. And think about that. The freaking planet's going, give me a break from human plucking and burning and buying and selling endlessly. So by seeking to practice commandment number 4, which we heard, keep it holy, keep the Sabbath holy, we get pushed back to commandment number 2, no graven images. And it isn't really so much, I don't think, a plastic Jesus for Americans as it is a graven idol of busyness, whatever that looks like for you. It goes something, I think, like this. Busy equals worthy. Worthy equals love. Love equals I'm okay. At least for now, as long as I keep busy, so I know I'm worth something, so I can earn the love that I desperately long for, so that I know that I'm okay. Right? We're back to it. At least for this month, but next month there are new deadlines which I need to get busy to put in front of people, right? So they know how to stay busy too. So they all know they're worthy, and then they will feel loved, which is my job to love all these people so that I feel okay, so that I feel. You see, aren't we? I'm tired. That's what it is. So let's try and understand something. Commandment number 2, waking up and feeling joy about the day ahead. Feeling joy for our lives, for the lives of our neighbor. Moving through our day, seeking ways to generously reach in love out of that sense of joy, coming back home at the end of the day, breaking bread, and then stopping, saying thank you. Amen. Commandment number 4, in the practice of what I just outlined, we will make our way towards God. In all of our doing of that, we will hopefully somehow uncover God. The 4th commandment of the Sabbath, keep it holy, compels rest for all of us, for the members of the household, for the members of the community, for the animals that we drive to work as well. And as such, it looks forward to the last 6 commandments that concerned all the neighborly relations. That's the part, don't kill, don't steal, don't covet, all of those. That's the framework we're to work on those in. The 4th commandment anticipates that we are at peace in our home and in our neighborhoods, and then sets out for us a discipline that will help us keep that peace. That ancient Torah is very straightforward. You shall not do any work. The key, though, is not you shall not. The key is you are free not to work. You are free not to be compelled to work. You are free from compulsions. One day a week, should, ought, and must need to lose their power. So that what that might look like, maybe like this. On Sundays, you worship God and you don't worship the clock. On Sundays, you worship God, you don't worship the dollar, you don't worship your ego. You worship God, whom you trust to run the whole world for one day without your brilliant help. It is brilliant. I had a conversation a little over a year ago now with a person who is very responsible, very hardworking, extremely conscientious. And this person is also deeply faithful. When we were getting started at the table, and you hear us say that story, and there are like less than 20 people around here, and we were just starting to build, and maybe we were getting in the 30s and 40s, Matt or I would ask some of you all, for help. And sometimes we would ask you for help in an area that wasn't exactly your passion. Let's be clear and honest. Sometimes we asked you for help to do things that you didn't really like to do. For example, it goes something like this. If you were alive and breathing, if you could get up and dress yourself, and if you could get here on time, right? We would ask you, please, would you stand somewhere between this door, because everyone used to come in this door. No one used these doors. So would you stand between this door and the parking lot, because we locked all the other doors, and make sure no one gets lost? And if you could smile while you're doing that, it would be so great. Right? That's what we had to ask people. And some people, if you're really shy and you don't like to talk to people, you know who you are. We asked a lot. That was hard. So, back to the, I was having a conversation with a person, and this person held a whole lot of jobs. But as our community grew, they didn't have to hold all those kind of jobs anymore. It was a surprise that it was a challenging transition. The moment I most vividly recall is that we were sitting together in this room, and the light was coming through that beautiful stained glass window, and it was filtering through, and I was hearing this person say, I used to do this, I used to do this, I used to do this, and this, and this, and this. And now, I just come in and receive and just sit here? Really? And then this person went, this is really hard for me and I don't like it. They were shocked. They really were in a place of transition. So we sat together. So I said, yeah, what would that be like to just come and receive this time for yourself right now? And this person continues to grow, like all of us, in understanding just how hard Sabbath keeping is for us. To understand God's unconditional love without us always having to be busy. So how is that going to be for you? Where do you begin? Well, the first way Christians can begin, I've already said, is to make a joyful and regular practice of attending public worship. And I know that's easier said than done. So there's a wonderful woman named Marva Dawn. She's a Lutheran theologian, and she has a much larger video talking to us about this. We're just going to show you a short part of Marva and her challenging us on how, and I'm not saying this is you, but maybe some of us felt this way this morning.
Yeah, what the biggest problem is that church isn't really being church. They use the fact that they use the word that church members use the word always in the wrong way. Like, I'm going to church. That's already bad theology. And when you speak bad theology, you live bad theology. You think like, this is one of the duties I have to do. I have to get in my car and I have to drive to this place and I'm going to church. Well, no, we are the church. And we're going to be strengthened. We're going to be equipped so that we can be church better all week long. And because this is a Sabbath day, we participate in worship and we engage in worship and draw closer to God and learn more about God's will. And God shows God's self to us and reveals different aspects of who God is and how that grace sets us free. And that delivers me on a Sabbath day so that I can serve God to the hilt the rest of the week. And part of the problem is that people don't know what Sabbath day is and that it's a community day, that we could celebrate it together. We could have dinner with another family. We could have a sports game for all the kids and the adults to play too together and let it be a day of fun and gladness in the congregation. But our congregations don't understand themselves as a body. And so that's part of why we miss the joy of Sabbath keeping. We don't keep it as a community, and we don't help each other. So my call to people to keep the Sabbath is a real call to the community, for the community to discover each other, and in each other's help we can find more rest and not make it a hurried, frantic day.
In each other's help, we can find more rest. Coming together in joy, serving God with gladness, praying on our knees or in the pews, singing and lifting our hearts in hope that we might be able to lay our weapons down in solidarity with other Christians on the other side who are trying their best to keep Sabbath as well. Is it something we do, or is it who we are, because of whose we are? See, we belong to God. And out of the joy of belonging in God's family, we try spending time breaking bread with our neighbor because we recognize that it is our call to watch over each other in love by keeping Sabbath. There's a common understanding in the United States society of Sabbath. It's really a misrepresentation of even you have to get busy doing it right. Because really, Sabbath keeping is an art form. And when you take it seriously, when it is taken seriously by both Jews and also by Christians, Sabbath keeping is actually a way of making a statement of our peculiar identity amid a larger public identity of maintaining and enacting a counter-identity. I know I'm using that word a lot, but it works here, that refuses to go towards that mainstream way of living, which itself entails anti-human practices that are not sustainable, that worship the god of busyness. When you understand Sabbath in this way of maintaining a peculiar identity, it's a physical and bodily act of testimony, of witnessing to our faith, saying, I'm going to slow down. It's a resistance to the pervading values and the assumptions that come underneath those values. Sabbath is testimony. Sabbath keeping is testimony and resistance. And both of those things are acts of faith. And it is an art form. And I know it's hard to figure out. We're products of our culture, and extracting ourselves out of that or stepping back and looking at our behavior like that Carl Honoré guy did, recognizing his need to go fast at bedtime, it's really challenging. Matt shared his own challenges last week. And if you weren't here, you can hear that on the podcast. Mine are different, but I still have my own too. And I really want to make a note here that the two of us will practice Sabbath in ways that really look different from the rest of you. And that's because we are your pastors, right? So frankly, we work on the Sabbath. That's our job, and we love it. We love it. We work on the Sabbath so you have even a prayer to keep the Sabbath holy. Does that make sense? Okay. So that's why you don't hear us talking about practicing our Sabbath on a Sunday. But you will hear us urging you to do that. And in keeping with what Marva Dawn said about in each other's help, we find our rest, you all help us to keep our own Sabbath, which looks different. So not all of you were here then, but I took my first real, I'd never done it before. I took 6 days away, and I went to Santa Fe, New Mexico last January with Matt's like booting me out the door. It was really, really hard. With my family's support and with friends down there who had a place for me. And for those days, I practiced yoga. I walked for miles and miles and miles. I experienced art everywhere that I possibly could soak it in. I kept hours and hours of silence, which is unheard of for me. I did have music playing at all times. I talked and reflected and broke bread for hours and hours with the two people who hosted me, both of whom are pastors, who are very important mentors to me in my life. And they're mentors to me because they can look through my crap and talk to me in ways and challenge me about how I am aligning my life with God's call. Not casual conversation. It's about how does my call, because they've known me since I was 14, 12 years old, align with God. And you all helped this happen because you allowed me to go. All right? You all supported it. That's what Marva Dawn means when she says that. In each other's help, we find God's rest. Matt's was different that he shared last week because, frankly, he's got a 4-year-old. And I've been there. And I am a little bit able to be free now. And wherever you are in your life, you have to find it that way. So we try to support each other to find those places where we are now. And we want to support you all to have this place be that. We heard last week from the reading in Genesis that God was busy creating for 6 days. But then God took a day off too. See? And this is a different kind of God than those people knew. Different than Pharaoh. It was a God who rested, a God who, in Walter Brueggemann's delightful words, said it this way, a God who said, I'm not going into the office tomorrow. I've put in long hours every day all week, and tomorrow I'm going to put my feet up and I'm going to enjoy what I have accomplished. I would probably say it differently. I would say something like, this is a different kind of God, a God who knows that after you give birth and launch everyone, you're really tired. See, I'm holding the womb. Oh, God, it's exhausting. And when the laundry's done and it's all folded in piles and the kids can take it to their room, when all the thank you notes have been written for the week, the grocery shopping is done and the lunches and snacks are there for the kids to pack on their own, all that's in place, I'm going to put my feet up and pick up my needles, enjoy a good long knit while I appreciate that everything is done for now. And I think they can exist for 24 hours without me. It's a life-changing way of thinking. Work is not finished until it is enjoyed. Wow. And then you rest. There's a lesson for grace of grace in there for all of us. The world doesn't depend on all of our activity. We don't have sole responsibility for the grain to grow. Responsibility for the sun to rise. I want to close with Wendell Berry, our poet of our hearts, because he says it better than me. He's a farmer and a poet, and he takes a walk every Sunday. And then he goes home, and he writes a Sabbath poem. And in one of those Sabbath poems, he describes how we ache and we sweat in our daily work and labor. And then he said, and yet no leaf or grain is filled by work of ours. The field is tilled and left to grace that we may reap. Great work is done while we are asleep. Let us try to remember that we are not God's gift. Jesus was, is. So let's receive God's generous love of rest and Sabbath, and let's try to support each other to say thank you. Thank you, God. And continue the practice of Sabbath keeping. And let's try that. I'm going to push you a little bit more because I'm going to say, let's try it as we pray right now. All of us are here. You just listened to words. Good job. Now take a breath and let it out slowly. And if you can feel your shoulders go down, that would be really good. And if you can actually feel your spine in the pew, get in touch with that. Let Brendan's music slow you down. See how slow. And we move into prayer with Enda. So you can pray from your seat. You can move to kneel. You may light a candle. I challenge you not to know what you're going to pray for until you actually get to that place. And if nothing comes up, then let nothing be there. And if something comes up, let it come up. And rest in God.
Oh, freedom.
Freedom, freedom.
Oh,
freedom, freedom.
Freedom.
It is for freedom that I am.
Oh, freedom.